Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading the chapter Indra and Sarabhi offer prayers. These are prayers to Lord Krishna. And we're on text 5 today. I'll read the transliteration. Kuta, how, knew certainly, tut, of that, existence of the material body. Hetavaha, the causes, Isha, O Lord. Tat Kritaha, produced by one's connection with the material body. Lobha Adhayaha, greed, and so forth. Yea, which? Abudha, of an ignorant person. Linga Bhavaha, symptoms. Tata Api, nevertheless, Dandam, punishment. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vibharti, wields. Dharmasya, of the principles of religion, Guptai, for the protection, Kala, of wicked persons, Nigrahaya, for the chastisement. Kuto nuta de tapa isha tat krita. Kuto nuta de tapa isha tat krita. Lubhadayo ye bhudalinga bhavaha. Lubhadayo ye bhudalinga bhavaha. Tathapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Tathapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Dharmasya guptai kala nigrahaya. Dharmasya guptai kala nigrahaya.
Thank you.
Translation purport by Disciple Sri Prabhupada. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. Purport. This complex philosophical statement by Indra may be analyzed as follows. In the first line of this verse, Indra refers to the main idea expressed at the end of the previous verse, namely, that the great currents of material existence which are based on ignorance cannot possibly exist within the Supreme Lord. The words tad devataha and tat kritaha indicate that something else causes the modes of material nature, modes of nature to manifest, and that they in turn become the cause of that which caused them. In the second line of the verse, we find that it is material feelings such as greed, lust, envy, and anger that cause the modes of nature to manifest, and that are themselves caused by the modes of nature. The explanation of this seeming paradox is as follows. When the conditioned soul decides to associate with the material qualities, he becomes contaminated by those qualities. As stated in Gita 13:22, karanam gunasangayasya sad yoni janmasu. For example, in the presence of a seductive woman, a man may give in to his lower instincts and try to enjoy sex with her. By his deciding to associate with the lower qualities of nature, those qualities manifest in him very powerfully. He is overwhelmed with lust and driven to try again and again to satisfy his burning desire. Because the mind has been infected by lust, all that he does, thinks, and speaks will be influenced by his strong attachment to sex. In other words, by choosing to associate with the lusty qualities of nature, he has caused them to powerfully manifest within himself. And eventually those lusty qualities themselves will cause him to accept another material body suitable for affairs governed by those qualities. The lower qualities, such as lust, greed, anger, and envy, are abhutalinga bhavaha, symptoms of ignorance. Indeed, as indicated by Srila Sridhara Swami in his commentary, the manifestation of the modes of nature is synonymous with the manifestation of a particular material body. It is clearly explained throughout the Vedic literature that the conditioned soul receives a particular body, gives it up, and then accepts another simply because of his involvement with the modes of nature. Karanam gunasangasya. Thus, to say that one is participating in the modes of nature is to say that one is accepting particular types of bodies suitable for the particular material qualities one is involved with. An ignorant bystander might have simplistically interpreted Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill as follows. The residents of Vrindavan were obliged by Vedic principles to make certain offerings to the god of heaven, Indra. Child Krishna, ignoring the position of Indra, usurped these offerings and took them for his own pleasure. When Indra tried to punish Krishna and his associates, the Lord frustrated Indra's attempt, humiliated him, and exhausted his pride and resources. But this superficial interpretation is refuted in this verse. Here, Lord Indra addresses Sri Krishna as Bhagavan, indicating that he is not an ordinary child, but in fact God. Therefore, Krishna's punishing Indra was part of his mission of protecting religious principles and curbing down the envious. It was not a display of material anger or of greed for the offerings meant for Indra. Sri Krishna is pure spiritual existence, and his simple, sublime desire is to engage all living beings in the perfect, blissful life of Krishna consciousness. Krishna's desire to make us Krishna conscious is not egotistical, since ultimately Krishna is everything, and Krishna consciousness is objectively the best consciousness. Lord Indra is really the humble servant of Krishna, a fact he is now beginning to remember. So we're just beginning these prayers by Lord Indra, the biggest and most powerful of the demigods. But we can see here that he is admitting to have overstepped his rank. Although being the supreme demigod, he overstepped, thinking that he was the supreme controller and he could manipulate everything, including Krishna. And but now he's having some realization, and he's praying to Lord Krishna and glorifying him, saying that actually, yes, without a doubt, you are the Supreme, and I am simply your belittled servant. But Krishna here is actually dragged Indra more or less off his throne and taken his head and his nose and rubbed it in his own pride. And he's learned a lesson from that. And in America, they say that he's been forced to eat his humble pie, which is not one of Betty Crocker's favorite recipes. It's hard to swallow. It's hard to swallow your pie. Very, very difficult. And Indra seems to have a hard time eating that pie again and again. But he is recognizing that Krishna has organized this whole show here to help him, and also to get rid of the rascaldom that is in his administration. He can't afford to have, you know, some person in his administration that thinks he's a big man on campus and can take advantage of it and can override him. So he's taking care of that situation by humbling Lord Indra, because it is really not healthy for anyone's position to have a very egotistical idea of himself. And so therefore we have this morning program, which Srila Prabhupada has helped us so that we can remember this daily. In the morning we chant, "Oh Lord, please accept me. Please let me be your eternal servant," again and again for 2 hours, 3, 4 hours, 5 hours. We're trying to absorb ourselves in this proper consciousness. And lo and behold, 9 o'clock we walk out of here, and within 5 minutes we've forgotten. You know, it's amazing, you know, we just forget so quickly. So therefore, every 12 hours, 24 hours, we sit down and we chant again, and maybe we'll get it this way. But this is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. But it seems like, because it's so easy to forget, that we're actually still hungry to feed that ego. You know, we keep finding places that we can taste some more pleasure, and thinking that we have some higher position than we are due by all means. It seems like we can always find some kind of some fame or popularity, but some size or shape of it that fits our ego, that will just simply stuff it up and puff it up a little bit more, which is not healthy. We actually need to cultivate this humility, as Indra is cultivating here. And one of the first steps of humility is actually to be honest of our position, to recognize who we really are, and that we are in this conditioned state, as it's describing here. We've got ourselves in a big mess. It's our fault. And now the material nature is conditioning us, and we're having to take on all these different unattractive and uncomfortable situations. One day we're passionate, the next day we're goodness, and the next we're mixed and ignorant, and we're constantly perplexed being here in this conditioned state. But Krishna now, Indra right now is crawling on his hands and knees, a little bit humble. He's actually admitting his some of his mistakes. But he's also very fearful. He's got Sarabi in front of him, and he's a little bit worried about what the verdict might be after this. Krishna judges him, so he's glorifying him, and he's saying, you know, he's hoping he's going to be a little softer on him. So he's saying how wonderful you are, but he does mean it. He does realize that he is not the Supreme anymore. But it's not easy to admit our faults. I know I have a very hard time when I actually have to say that you were right and I was wrong. Really hard to say that, because the ego is, we're always thinking that we are right. And we're always making fools of ourselves, because we're never always right. Barely are we ever right. So this is something that we have to work on. We have to hear from the acharyas of their prayers of humility, and maybe we'll imbibe them. I know the song Gopinath is full of three whole big huge stanzas of prayers saying of his position. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but it's not really his position, but he's telling us what position we should have of humility, that I'm not qualified. I don't deserve this, but I need the mercy of your lotus feet, Krishna. A couple of them are really nice. Oh, Gopinath, I have fallen into the perils of illusion. Wealth, wife, and sons have surrounded me, and lust has wasted me away. Oh, Gopinath, my mind is crazy and does not care for any authority. It is always senseless and has remained in the dark pit of worldly illusions. So these should resound within us. And if you do sing them regularly, they resound in you. You say, yes, this is the attitude I really should have. And by doing this, I can begin on the path of becoming a little bit humble. And then, of course, Krishna is also going to give us help on the path also, because Krishna is time. And time wears away our good bodies, which we're so attached to, which our ego is made of. And then is, I think anyone in this room who has reached the top of the hill and is on the way down, realizes that pretty soon you see spokes and nuts and bolts flying off on the way down, and you realize that you're not so together anymore, and you can't do a lot of things you used to do. And you become a little bit smaller and smaller and smaller as your body gets smaller because of this and that, as the parts fall off. So we do get some help, but the regret also has to be there to keep that humility. When we're chanting, we should be in regret for Mood. I'm so sorry I broke off this relationship. Please accept me again. And this has to be sincere. This sincerity is what really, really counts. And sincerity means that I won't do it again. So that means that we really can't let our ego get out of control. And so therefore, there's one very nice guard against that, an insurance against blowing it again in this lifetime. And that is taking the vow with the spiritual master, that you're actually depending on your spiritual master to help you. And it means that I've promised. I have to be sincere. That sincerity is strengthened so much so that you will never break that vow, and that you will prove to Krishna in this lifetime, I mean business. I might not make it all the way, but I do mean business this lifetime. I'm not going to go within my boundaries. So it's very, that insurance, that vow, that promise is so very, very important. And it really solidifies our good chances of deflating that ego. But there are so many opportunities to inflate that ego. I think Nanda was discussing, or Mathura was discussing, how we're supposed to, give praise to each other and give, appreciation to each other. And at the same time, we have to, remain humble. And of course, that means, giving that glory to the spiritual master. Only by his grace do we really have the opportunity to serve. And then, of course, we can't take that appreciation to our head, as sometimes we do, or worse, to our heart, and think that, well, about time, it's about time they appreciated what I did, about time they noticed me, and then start demanding that appreciation. If you don't get it, then you, well, what's going on, So we have to be very careful how we take that praise. Actually, one person came over to me just a couple days ago and said, which was very nice. It was a good way to give praise. They just said, thank you for dressing the deities today. They didn't say, oh, you did so this, you did go, oh, this was great, that. Just thank you for dressing the deities. In other words, thank you for doing that service for Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for being engaged in devotional service. And that that you can take, and it's not like, you know, something to do with me. It's just, I'm really just serving my spiritual master. I'm just really doing what I'm supposed to be doing, which I should have been doing this whole lifetime, for many, many lifetimes. Just thank you for doing that service. I thought it was very nice. It was, you know, able to take that and not let it go to your head. I'll try not to, anyway. But who really likes being with somebody who is full of themselves? It's really painful, right? I recently ran into someone, and I tried to have a conversation with this person, and every single time I said something, I couldn't finish one sentence without them saying about themselves. And when I was done with the conversation, I mean, it was just like, all right, whatever, you know? I guess, you know, I just felt like, am I here? You know, are you not see me or something? You know, not me, I have something to say. But I never got a word in. And it was like very uncomfortable, you know, to be with someone who's completely full of themselves. So we should realize that Krishna also is in our heart, and we're so full of ourselves that we butt him out, you know? And so that's not very nice. It's very rude. It's a very rude thing. Therefore, we have to take up, like Indra here is glorifying Krishna. We have to take up this chanting of Hare Krishna and glorify Krishna all the time. It should be a 24-hour engagement. Otherwise, we slip back into that position. I mean mine, all that. And it's not comfortable. But Krishna is really our friend, and he wants us back. And he would like to be back in our hearts in full face. And he's been helping Indra here. So he's arranged this correction, this punishment. I guess you can say punishment. But this punishment is not torture. Krishna doesn't have that attitude of punishment, it's torture. Srila Prabhupada also didn't. When he punished us, it was to correct us, to rearrange something. Prisons are now called correctional institutions. They're not prisons. Someone just sent me a link to a prison in India. And it was an amazing thing that had happened to that prison. It was known for being a torturous place. And people were interviewed, and they had scars all over them from being in the prison, from the beatings of the guards. And it was just known for horrible conditions and just a real torture chamber, hellish for a torture chamber. And then all of a sudden, they got a new administrator. It was a woman. And she completely changed the place. And it was because of her attitude of actually wanting to correct them, to actually not punish them by torture, but by changing them, by changing that thing. And it was very interesting how she did it. And she actually introduced this type of yoga, this type of meditation, which completely changed everybody. But you could see that she had to work on the guards the most, actually, because they had that attitude. These people did wrong, bam, you know? And of course, the increase of the consciousness of the inmates got more and more violent, more and more, you know, degraded, which is not what's supposed to happen. So Krishna here is not trying to torture everyone. He doesn't do it out of envy either. Like here is describing that you know, the normal person would think, oh, well, he just wanted to get all those offerings, not Indra, so Krishna wanted it. But that's not what's happening. Krishna's not envious. He's everything. He's the supplier and an owner of everything. So he's not, you know, powered by his false ego. We can see that this envy is a product of the false ego. So we have to definitely not try to do anything to get this envious attitude, because it does not fit in this movement. Srila Prabhupada said that it just does not go with spiritual life. You don't find it in the spiritual world. Envy is not there. So it means, you know, pushing someone down so that you can look better. That means that you don't want that person to do devotional service. And that's a demoniac thing. You want to do more service, you don't want that person to serve. That service, is that really service? So envy is also, it's devoid of compassion. That's what it means. It means that you just want to excel everybody. It's you. And that is means that you want to excel Krishna openly. And so how can you do devotional service? As you can see here, Indra did his so-called service, but it wasn't. He didn't really do devotional service. He actually was against Krishna and went against Krishna. So we cannot fall to that. In Krishna consciousness, we should actually relish the achievements of other people. We really should. Just like, you know, I remember the first time someone painted a backdrop here. It was like, oh, thank you for doing that. It was just such a delightful thing, something different, you know. So we should relish these abilities of people to do service. Because Krishna can't tolerate this envy, just like he couldn't tolerate Indra anymore. So we have to make sure that we don't have this power hungry attitude that I want more and more power, I want to excel. There's a very good example of that in Kali Yuga. Actually, we've been hearing about it in the last week. It's this Monsanto. They're power, you know, they're power crazy. Actually, I was thinking GMO, God move over. You know, move over. We're the creator of seeds. We're the creator of everything, right? And we're the maintainer. We're going to maintain all the other growers. We're going to get them out of their sight. We're going to maintain everything. Creator, maintainer, and destroyer. We're going to destroy all the land. We're going to destroy your bodies with the chemicals. And we're going to destroy this whole earth planet with our dominance, right? So God move over. But you can see, this is the mentality that's described in Bhagavad Gita of demoniac nature. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice in this way. Such persons are deluded by ignorance. Fits the bill perfectly, doesn't it? So this is the attitude that we should avoid at all costs. And luckily, we have these great personalities, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, that have come not to torture us, not to punish us in any way, but simply to give us all the benediction of the holy name, which is such an easy, easy, joyful, and powerful process. It actually can dissipate all this envy and greed, all these different material qualities that drive us to have to come back again and again. Of course, Lord Chaitanya had to be reminded once when he got a little out of control and he wanted to, you know, punish Jagannath Mahadev with the disc. He had reminded, no, not this age. You got to be light on everybody, you know, really falling. So we should be very, very merciful and realize the power of the holy name. What we have on our tongues is that it can get rid of so much disgrace that we have. And it's also that means of begging forgiveness daily and of the great purification, just like the sun can purify a urinary place. We can actually purify our contaminated hearts. There's one prayer that, one song, it's a Hari Nama Eva Kevalam, and it's the last verse is very applicable, describing the holy name. It makes the entire universe seem insignificant. It splendorously reigns supreme over all. It is full of eternally conscious divine ecstasy. It is supremely pure. The holy name of Sri Hari is everything. So we are so fortunate to have this holy name that will not be such a painful process for us, that we can actually accept and see it actually happen right in front of us. Prabhupada said this is a scientific process. In science classes, what you do, you put a whole bunch of stuff in, you shake it up, or you add this and that. And so in the same way, we can see that we get shaken up in Krishna consciousness and the modes of material nature and all of our bad habits and everything, they float all around. And then gradually, we can scrape off the envy, the lust, and the greed as it settles. We can get rid of it. We see it get clearer and clearer. And then settled on the bottom is this pure love for Krishna that is our real self, our soul, our real ego. All that false ego, we will see. Have faith. We will see by the power of this holy name, it will go away, it will clear, and will subside our real love for Krishna. So we are so very, very fortunate. And then we think, but it's taking so long. 10, 20, 30, 40 years, I'm being shaken up and a little scrape off here, so long, when is it going to get clear? When am I going to get to the clearing stage of chanting Hare Krishna? But if you think of Indra, how long does he live? We went through it yesterday, I don't know, tons of years. And he's blown it a few times, yes, but he was in a post that he got by being a very pious person, right? He had to make it up there by being very pious. So he was very qualified, but he blew it a few times, and he had to live a long time. And so think how many lifetimes we've been blowing it. Not just one lifetime. He has one long lifetime. But we have many lifetimes, and how many lifetimes have we made mistakes? Millions. And in this one lifetime, a big mess, right? So it's going to take some time, but it is guaranteed by this process that in this lifetime we can achieve that. So we have to have that faith, and we have to sincerely chant to have that effect, that chemical reaction really happen, is that sincerity. Otherwise it could take a little longer, but better sooner than later. Let's do it in this lifetime. You know, our 2 little hours, 4 little hours, 5 little hours, whatever we chant, and we really concentrate, and we really, you know, put in what we can. Why not double it every day? Why not tomorrow triple it, that sincerity and that chanting, and see what happens? It'll last longer, maybe till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you know, maybe it'll get us partway through the day. So, you know, it's a challenge, but Krishna will take us back, sooner or later. He'll take us back, and he'll reclaim us. And we just have to keep remembering that we're Nitya Krishna Das. We're simply a insignificant little servant of Krishna. And to realize that whatever we do here in this lifetime for Krishna is very insignificant, and everything will go on without us. Like I was telling Manavati, I spent my japa period in the cemetery the other day, and watching all the cars zoom by this little cemetery, a little teeny cemetery over here, and everything's gone. I see all these, you know, amongst all these people, they're gone, completely gone, but everything's still going on out there. You know, the guys are going to work, they're fixing this, and the bicycle's going by, and everyone's going to school, and everything's going on. These guys, you know, doesn't make any difference. In the same way, this will all go on without us. But Krishna would like us back so we can get back to our real business. So these are some things I thought about. Maybe someone else has some questions. Yes, Mata.
Thank you for allowing Prabhupada to speak to you so nicely. One comment and then a question. If anybody's not looking out for GMO foods before eating. I've heard Monsanto actually, in their building, they only eat organic. They don't eat, somebody infiltrated and looked at what goes on in there, and they don't eat their GMO. So they know what it does to them and us. I appreciated your point about Chetaguru being like if we're full of ourselves and not giving space to allowing him to communicate. My question is, when we're in stressful periods or there's like a lot going on or somebody's yelling at us or it's an intense situation, so many situations like that in the material world, how to hear Chetaguru?
You got to call out to him. You got to bring him back. Krishna, now help him. Come back and help me. That's pretty much what you got to do. He might be, you know, taking some rest because he doesn't really want to be around you because you're not in a very good attitude. But then when you do call out, that's why Papa said we should call out like we really need help, and we do need help. It's just that we don't think we need help, but we do. So you have to call a little louder, and he'll come. So that's my suggestion. Yes. Actually, that example of eating organic is like that time I told you that some relative of mine has cement making factory in South Florida. He says, as soon as I get cement spread all over South Florida, it's completely covered with South Florida, I'm going to live up here in the mountains in my beautiful home. Same attitude. So compassionate.
Radha Govinda Maharaj is giving a class and he says the policemen and the guards in India, they're actually like Jamadutas.
Yeah.
The way they treat the prisoners also, they're like, there's some horror chambers in this material world, and those are the devilish planets.
Yeah, so Yamraj has to deal with that. Krishna doesn't deal with that. He got someone else to do that nasty duty. I don't know what it means. Does anyone know what you have to do to become a Yamaduta? I mean, there are people that have that position. I mean, what do you?
I read in the Garuda.
Maybe you have to be a prison guard in India.
The Garuda Puran says that for some souls that are really so sinful, and they don't have any piety in them, sometimes they're accepted later on after punishment and stuff to take some of that role.
It was amazing after it showed the difference of the prison. It showed, you know, a prisoner, an inmate, hanging on the guard, crying, and the guard was rubbing his head. And, I mean, a whole different attitude.
So my question now is, we have so much religionists, and yet so many of them believe that they could go back to heaven or the spiritual world, but yet they're mercilessly slaughtering all these animals. I mean,
wishful thinking.
You know, I mean, how is that? Is that possible in any way in
You'd have to ask the court up there. I don't know. They have to figure that out. I don't know. I don't know what goes on up there. We don't either. But they do have some, you know, wishful thinking. I know my mother, you know, she does simple things, but she says, oh, I'm going back. What can I say? Yeah, eventually. That's why we have to keep feeding prasadam. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.